Crab Feast. You know what it's all about.
This is the Crab Feast. I'm yelling, fuck that. You ain't gotta ask me, cause you can trust that. Every Tuesday, you already knew though. Ryan Sickler, soccer star, JUCO. Above ground, cool goes better than most. Jay Larson, self-diagnosed. Go down low this week, last week. Here we go again, fuck the Crab Feast.
It's the job.
Yeah! Welcome back to the Crab Feast, y'all. Another Tuesday. Another Crab Feast with that ass. That was a downshift right there.
I just left my mouth open, man. No sound was coming out.
I was like, man, he's hanging in there this week trying to push me, and then I just heard the downshift.
You just saw. I just had the mouth open, baby. I don't know how you get that, man. You got. I got to work.
I don't either. I really don't. But it's damn good to see you, Jay.
Good to see you, Sickle Cell. Good to touch your pitch.
Oh.
Boston. This weekend, Jay Larson, that's me, jaylarsoncomedy.com. I'll be at Laugh Boston, one show Friday, two Saturday. If you don't have tickets, get them now. I can't wait to be home, and I'd love to see you out. It's going to be a great weekend. Other than that, nothing really exciting coming up. I will keep you posted. Any in-town dates, I'll always post on Twitter, or Instagram. That's it for me. You can always go to my website, get my special Me Being Me. And tell your friends to check it out as well. Ryan?
RyanSickler.com. Ryan Sickler on all social media. Flipped it this week. Guys, go to thecrabfeast.com. Take the survey. Upper right corner. Turn your ad blocker off. Take the survey for us. Let us find out a little bit about you. Catch us on, Spotify. We're out there on Spotify. We're everywhere. Go to thecrabfeast.com. You can get all your information there. You can also get that merch you guys keep talking about. We'll get a new shirt. We're going to get a new shirt. We've gotten a lot of good suggestions. I'm not sure which one we're going to use yet. Follow the Crab Feast on Facebook and Twitter.
Great sponsor. We've had them on before. Brook Linen. If you are looking for home bedding, sheets, pillowcases, comforter, this is the spot for you to go. I found Brook Linen online, actually. I don't know, maybe about 8 to 10 months ago. And then when we were approached to do a sponsorship, I was like, 100%. I love them. They have great style. They're super, super, super comfortable. You spend like a third of your life in your sheets. You might as well have great sheets to get into. And they're hands down the most comfortable sheets I've ever had. And there's no big markup. You know, it's tough to shop for sheets. You never know what you're looking for. Egyptian, thread count. Brook Linen take cares all of that for you. They take care of it.
So somebody needs to take care of it.
Do yourself a favor and just like upgrade how your nightly routine with better sheets. Okay, founded in April 2014 by a husband and wife team. Their philosophy: more beautiful, comfortable home essentials. No crazy prices. No unnecessary markups and fees. Most bedding is marked up as much as 300%. That's insane. This is luxury bedding under price. You have to give it a shot because I'm telling you, you're going to feel like you're getting into a hotel every time you get in a bed. This is what's going on. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive anniversary event happening this week only, starting Thursday, April 26th. Running through Tuesday, May 1st. So this Thursday to next Tuesday, you get free shipping and up to 20% off site-wide when you shop at brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com this week only. They rarely run events like this, so take advantage while you can. Only way to get the free shipping and 20% off site-wide, go to brooklinen.com this week only. Brooklinen, these sheets are the best sheets I've ever had. I wish I could say this week's episode was the best I ever had, but we'll see. I love this human being to death, and I'm excited to have him back on. We loved him the first time. We're going to love him the second time. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back to the Crab Feast, Mr. Jimmy Schubert!
Jimmy Schubert!
Welcome back to the Crab Feast.
Jimmy Schubert! Part two. I was listening to the last episode before I came down here. I was like, man, I cursed a lot during that. I was cursing like a sailor on leave in the Philippines.
Yeah,
it wasn't great.
I didn't realize.
The stories were great, but I just, you know, when you can use the F bomb as an adjective, a pronoun, or verb.
I'm just saying the feedback wasn't. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Oh, is that right? Well, I thought they enjoyed it.
They love the Doves, bro.
I love the Doves. I know.
Go back and listen to Jimmy's first episode about his magician.
You guys got great fans because they did a bunch of photos. Some dude had me having Doves, like he photoshopped a picture. I was like, oh, I love this. I gotta download that. I should make that my profile picture.
I love that, dude.
Well, thank you for being back on Tuesday. Will you promote your social media? Any dates you have?
Tomorrow I'm going to, this will probably air afterwards, but I'm going to be up in Portland, and then anybody can find me at Jimmy Schubert on Twitter, at Jimmy Schubert on Instagram. Jimmy Schubert Comedian is my fan page on Facebook, and of course Jimmy Schubert on the YouTube.
You've been more active on putting videos out there, I've noticed.
Yeah, well, because it's like, realize you guys get this. You guys get it because
we don't
do it.
I don't do it.
Well, you know, but you're doing a podcast every week, which is still doing social media and more than most people. And it's funny because, like, I know guys that are older than me that just didn't wrap their minds around it. I just was lucky I had a web guy that said, listen, you got to lean into this. Because you see all the people that are booking at comedy clubs now are all social media influencers. And we just live in a strange time. I find it almost insulting when you get a guy who's got a million YouTube downloads, and so they bring him into a comedy club. I'm going, well, what about the comedy? These people like to step over a dollar to pick up a penny. I go, yeah, well, most of these guys are horrible. They're great for 15 minutes in front of their video recording equipment,
edited and all that.
Yeah, but it's not the same thing. But I guess, you know, they're still running the business, got to make money, so they do it. But I want to be able to compete, and so I've been leaning into it a lot more now because you have to embrace it. I'm kind of a private guy, so it's a little.
He's
a private guy.
Watching you.
Oh,
seeing your every move.
Private guy. A little Hall & Oates for you.
I'm the same way, too. I say I'm private, and you say you're private. For comedians, I mean, obviously, we get up on stage in front of strangers and talk about our lives, but putting it out there on video and all that, it's a little different for me.
Yeah, I don't mind doing it if I got something interesting to do, but I mean, a lot of these people.
I put photos. Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram's great, but you know, there's a guy.
Where he's been putting up the most of his videos.
The
reviews haven't been great, like just on the comments.
That's right. Yeah, some of the comments haven't been great. What do I give a shit? It's about some troll who lives in his parents' basement.
Right.
He's down there playing PlayStation for 5 hours a day, eating Doritos and beating off till his dick's orange, surfing the neighbor's wireless, and he's going to weigh in and put a nasty comment on my YouTube video. I give a fuck what that guy thinks.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
How are the new hips?
The new knees are fantastic.
Let's talk about that.
Last year was a tough year. I had to get my one knee done.
You only have one knee now.
No, I had to get my
Josh Adams got two front legs.
Hind legs or front legs?
Right, hold on one second. Are you comfortable giving your age?
Yeah.
How old are you?
51.
All right, 51.
Wow.
And were you an athlete growing up?
Yeah, played Pop Warner football.
Played for the Bears, dude. 87 through 89. So the
played
practice
for the
squad.
A4 team.
I used to walk like I played for the Bears. But practice squad.
Sport.
I was a red shirt. But
were you a runner back?
Yeah,
the day?
I used to run. Like, I used to play football. I used to do martial arts. I used to do all that stuff. And
wait a minute.
You were a magician.
What martial art were you doing?
I studied the Philadelphia Choir, Wing Chun, Kung Fu, which later turned into Jeet Kune
Do. Did you say Philadelphia Choir?
The Philadelphia Aquatic Club.
It was
just in the water with like old folks.
No. They had a dude who taught martial arts there. They also had a gym there. They also had an indoor Olympic sized swimming pool there. It was like this big.
I just went to the YMCA in my neighborhood the other day because I was like, I wonder what a YMCA in 2018 looks like. It looks like a fucking country club.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's ridiculous. That's,
well, so they would teach all these things there, and so I studied and I got into it and studied. What kind of belt did you have? I was a black belt. I mean, I studied from the time I was a kid.
Jimmy,
yeah,
look at me in the eyes.
a black belt, bro.
They start.
We'll do some chi sao.
There's no color.
Yeah, yeah. It was no color. I got a black belt with a
chi sao.
It's the
kung
fu.
I don't want to be.
Do you remember your instructor's name?
I don't want to.
Rick Tucci.
Who runs? Not gonna believe this shit, right?
No, Rick Tucci.
Rick Tucci.
Come on, this is your life. Ricky. No, but the guy, he actually runs the Princeton Academy of Martial Arts now, and he teaches full contact stick fighting, Kali Eskrima. It's a Filipino martial arts. Those sticks Bruce Lee used, but it's called Kali Eskrima stick fighting. And he has a full contact team that he teaches.
Kali Eskrima. So. My son had that same skin rash, Kali Eskrima.
Kali Eskrima.
And we got this nice steroid cream on it, and it just fucking went away.
Nice. I'm Bacitracin, man. All right, so athlete growing up, a lot of sports and everything.
And I was in a motorcycle accident, which made the one leg a little shorter than the other. So
what
it was
happened? Tell us about that. I got
hit by a car. I mean, the guy T-boned me.
How old were you?
I was probably about 23, 24.
Helmet or no helmet?
No helmet.
Ooh.
I was right across from Canner's, but a little newsstand.
Oh,
there.
You were out here, okay.
Yeah, and I had to get rushed.
What kind of bike?
I was a little 350 Enduro street dirt bike, and I had a car, but it was in the shop, and so I was driving it, and some old dude just bing hit me and T-boned me.
Lost you fly about, over?
Yeah, I had to go to the hospital, dude. I was in the hospital for 17 days. It was pretty
Damn.
Bad.
17?
I almost lost my left leg. I mean, it was bad, and they had to do a bone graft off the hip because there's only two bodies in the bone that regenerate yourself, and that's the hip and your skull. So if they take that and make a macerate and make a paste, and they rub on the bone, it'll actually eventually all
some hip
together.
Paste.
Some hip paste. Yeah. So
you fly over this car. Do you remember anything from that?
Yeah, I remember grabbing my knee, my leg in the middle of the shin, and it was hanging.
It was
pretty bad. I was like, and then the dude came over, a Jewish guy that ran the thing.
Said
a prayer with me, bro. He grabbed me and said a prayer with me. A guy was praying with me. A Jewish dude was praying with a Roman Catholic kid from Northeast.
I think you're praying to the wrong guy.
Yeah. Hey, bro, what's that? What are you
Here's
doing?
My guy's number.
How long was it until like a ambulance arrived?
No, it was about 15 minutes. I went to Cedar Sinai, and actually got me, and then the attorney showed up and took care of me, and I was wound up.
An attorney showed up.
Yeah, believe it or not, dude. Ambulance exhaust all over his face.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Let me talk to you about what's going on. I got easy there.
You're like, who are you?
Yeah, but I had to because they kept me in the hospital, and I actually got the best care. Believe it or not, I didn't really even have insurance, and then I got a great doctor, and he took care of me over the course of years. They had to do the bone graft, they had to do other things, but so I had the discrepancy, which caused me a great deal of pain in my legs. Started to bow out, so I got that Screen Actors Guild insurance last year, and that's a great insurance. And the doctor said,
"What do you have to make to get that?
You got to make about $12,500 to get Plan B, and to make $21,000 to get on Plan A." But
I got Plan C.
Yeah, I got Plan C. I just need help to take care of myself. But you know, so he just said, "I said I got the insurance for a year." He goes, "We're getting your knees done." And my general practice, my doctor was more excited for me than I was. And the first knee went great. And I was like kind of between knees because I still had to get the left one done.
Between knees, dude. That's your next
between
album.
But I had a rod down the center of that bone, the lower shin. And so he went in to see if he could pull that out. And he couldn't get it out. And so then he went in to do the knee. But the x-ray showed that the pole bended up at the top so he could fit the cap in the knee. I'll show you pictures in the break. But I mean, they
what break?
They,
what break? Break are you
taking
talking
breaks.
About?
We're taking breaks here.
At halftime?
What do you think we're doing a commercial break?
That's
a
break. I'm so used to doing radio. But they basically shaved the top of the bone off, got rid of all the arthritis. They put a metal cap on it. They put the silicone piece. They use all your same ligaments and stuff. They reattach and rebuild it. And so last year was a really tough year, but I'm doing great.
That was the left knee last year?
I got the right one done in March. I got the other one done in October, and I had the other operation in September. But you can't fly after you have them done for a month because they worry about blood clots. So I was just trying to, like, you know.
Were you on crutches?
Yeah, crutches, a walker for the first couple days. And then
you're off the road.
But what I loved about it was that you're on 2 days in the hospital, then you go home, and then they send people to your house. So the physical therapist comes out to your house. And so, yeah, it was
the only way I knew that you had done this is because I follow the Bears on Instagram, and they put out a, like, get well better, you know, team of 87, and picture you just with your old jersey on.
Yeah, look so bad, look at it, I can walk on both sides of the street at the same time.
That's crazy. I mean, to have them both done in the same year.
Well, you know, the thing is, I'm glad I did it because, you know, I'm young enough that it will affect the quality of my life. I mean, I was in rehab with the, like, 63-year-olds and 72-year-olds, right. And they were really struggling. So, I mean, yeah, I knew I had to get it done. Why put it off?
Was it hard to walk?
Oh, yeah. It was, dude, it's painful. I mean, they're hinge joints. I was in so much pain.
Like, what, you feel it when
hinge
you
joints,
bend?
Man. You know that.
I know that.
Joe, come on.
Elbows
but
knees,
yes, right. And I only did two rounds of the medication. I did 10s and then 5s, two rounds, and then I got off them. I didn't want to, you know, I just think it taking those those kind of pain pills, like it, you know, retards the healing process.
So. Yeah.
But now it's funny. I walk. I get up in the morning. I go out for a 2 mile, 3 mile walk around my neighborhood, get some coffee, do my thing. Because I was in so much pain before, I would never walk really anywhere. And now I walk almost everywhere. I love it, right in my neighborhood.
Well, that's good. You, especially when you're going to lose it for a little while. Once you get it back, you're like, fuck.
Yeah. Well, I just, you know, I mean, I prayed for it. I really wanted to, I really just No, I'm Catholic, bro. You know,
you got slid over to the other side on that motorcycle accident.
That's right, right.
I mean, talk about being grateful for what you have. Mitzi Shore passing. You know, we talked a little bit about that before we got on the mics.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, you know, Mitzi.
When did you become a regular there?
I became a regular there in 1986. I remember I came out to showcase. Came out to showcase, and I was like a kid, man.
From
I was
Philly,
like,
or were you in New York?
Yeah,
at that
from
point?
Philly. I loaded all my stuff in my car, and I drove across. Oh, and in two weeks, I showcased for Mitzi, started my day job, and moved into my place I was living.
What was the day job?
I was working in a law firm in the mailroom, and so I had benefits and stuff, and then eventually I became the runner. But I remember the night I started at the Comedy Store. Tony Clifton was doing the main room, and it was about a year after Andy Kaufman's death.
Yeah.
And so everybody thought Andy Kaufman was going to show up, so they had camera crews and everything, and Tony Clifton was a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
And people walked out, and he flicked a cigarette at somebody and spilled a drink. I mean, I go, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
And it was horrible. But then I eventually became a doorman. After that, I was a doorman there and then came up through Mitzi's system and eventually became a paid regular.
So you knew Mitzi when she was like still a – I mean, because when I met Mitzi, when she passed me, she was still coming in and doing her thing, but she was still like – not great. I mean, she lived a life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. And, you know, that place is, she created a really magical place at the Comedy Store, and that you can go in there. And I mean, I literally got to watch the best stand-up comedians in the country and trade punchlines with the best comedians in the country and get to hang out and know
You'd
these guys.
You think some of it would have rubbed off, you know?
Yeah, you would.
You know, people call her the queen of comedy. I said it today, too, the queen of comedy. But when you really look at it, I would have to say arguably best eye for talent in all of entertainment. I mean, look how many people.
Anybody who's anybody.
Mega stars.
Yeah. I mean, you know, from Howie Mandel to David
she said
Letterman.
Yes to every one
Arsenio
of those.
Arsenio Hall, Andrew Dice Clay, Sam Kinison. I mean,
Pryor,
Carlin and Pryor.
Robin Williams.
And dude, and you're sitting there with the, you got the best seat in the house, just sitting there
and
watching
you're going,
these
yup,
guys.
Yup,
and it was,
yup,
yeah,
yup.
It was
See,
amazing. So
for me, it wasn't that though. Because if you look at like, the Improv put up those guys. The Factory put up those guys. What Mitzi created was a place where you were guaranteed, if you were regular, you're almost guaranteed at least a spot, or you're going to get in the belly room. And she made the belly room specifically so women, female comics, had a room to grow.
Yeah.
And then if you were in the OR, like I wrote on my Instagram today, it's like when you get up in that room now, it's like if you aren't trying something new or you're not pushing the envelope, like why are you there? Like when you're around, you know, like she was always like – like, even the way she set up her showcase, you did 3, then you did 6, then you did 15, and then she would tell you if you're ready, or she'd want you working somewhere, but you were always like, it was the craft. She didn't just, like, say, that guy's great, and then they're going to be, they're famous.
No.
Obviously, they were. She gave them a place to cultivate.
Yeah, and she took it seriously, and she nurtured these guys, and she believed
in,
she nurtured you,
she
and like you said,
gave
you space to where you could fail and get better, because stand-up comedy is one of those things that you, it's, you know, trial and error. You have to fail in order to get better. You have to, it's one of those art forms you almost have to disrespect before you can respect it. But you're right. She did create this environment where you can go in, and way before women in comedy were even, I mean, she had a whole room for them. And this is back in 72 where Mitzi was running this business, and back when women just didn't do that. So she's an innovator and a discoverer of talent.
Do you remember the day she passed you?
I don't remember the exact date. No, I don't.
Not the date, but the moment, or like, did she?
Yeah, I did. I was working my tail off. I was, you know, we would go on a Monday night, we could do the Natural Fudge, which is over on Fountain. And then we'd go over to the
these mics or these
yeah shows? These were mics and Monty Steakhouse in Westwood that you can go do a mic in, and that's where me and Noodles drove Paulie to his first gig. Then we'd go over to the Alley Cat Bistro in Culver City. Then we'd come up to the Silver Screen Jazz Room, which was in the hotel room next door to the Comedy Store. There was a spot there, Then walk across to the Comedy Store for a late night spot. The first Monday night where you could do five spots, you would do 20 minutes a piece. Damn. And you're working with another guy who's like taking notes while you're on stage. Yeah. And it was all I gave a shit about was just trying to become good enough that you can make your living at
it. And what year is this?
This is 86, 87.
So, I mean, the boom is like happening. So, yeah, for guys that are younger are like, they are seeing what the potential is.
Oh, dude. And Monday nights there was like magical. Like, you know, Kinison would go up there with the Soapers, which was this improv group. Him and Robin Williams would come in and do improv together. Then, you know, and then you can go on and do those. And it wasn't like a who's who, a cavalcade of, like, you know, porn stars and rock and rollers and actors and directors. I mean, John Landis was in there, Randy Quaid, Lorraine Newman from the – I mean, it was like – it was the spot, man. It was ground zero at the comedy boom, you know. And it was amazing. I mean, every freaking night there was something going on. And, you know, and you forge great friendships there and great alliances with people that you'll have for the rest of your life. So it was, you know, it was really like my college, you know.
Yeah.
That's the way I looked at it.
So when you were there, it was the setup it is now, original main and
same
the belly?
Room. Yeah, and you could, you know, you do the trifecta. You could do the belly room, the original room, and the main room. I mean, what other club in Los Angeles, especially lately? I mean, they're three sold out shows.
Every place.
I mean, she had to be happy that this place is. I mean, they're doing sold out shows every night there, and it's because of guys like you doing podcasts, you know, and all that stuff. And so, yeah, I'm glad to see that the place is kind of like back to its glory days. You know, it reminds me a lot of like when I first came out there in the 80s, how packed it was and how exciting it was and all the great talent there. I mean, it's like a virtual who's who of, you know, everybody, you know,
every
it's great.
Night.
Yeah. Every night. It's like a comedy festival almost every single night. You know?
Yeah. Did you have any like cool? I mean, you must have known her. So she was young when you knew her.
Yeah, yeah. And
you were working for her. Were you ever running for her? Because I know like, she'd have like the door
that
guys.
That was the runner job. You'd have to get her a bag of almonds and apples every Monday. And then she also back then she had a room at the Dunes Hotel in Las Vegas. And so you would get the limo. She had the limo and you'd load up all the guys, would meet at the Comedy Store, park their cars there. Then you'd get into the limo. You'd drive them over to Burbank. They would all get on the plane to fly to Vegas. Mitzi would stay there for a night or two, watch the show, make adjustments, and then get on a plane and come back the next day. And then you pick her up in the limo and take her back to the Comedy Store.
Oh, my God.
But you also had to run documents down to the lawyer, but you had the Comedy Store vehicle. You had a beeper. You had $100 petty cash. And it was the greatest job.
That's the life.
That was the greatest job in the world. I mean, if you're an up-and-coming comic, because you got to have an audience with Mitzi who would, you know, and she did. She believed in me, and she passed me and told me, you know, this, that, and the other thing, and she liked my stuff. And
would she watch you a lot and then give you pointers when you come
Yeah, off? Yeah. She was great. I mean, I had a great relationship with Mitzi. I got nothing bad to say. I mean, you know, it's just...
Someone told me, I don't know if this is true, that she didn't like the chicken omelet bit. Is that true? I heard that she just didn't like it.
No, she loved the chicken omelet bit.
It was the dove.
It was the dove she had a problem with. I come in.
Did you ever go in her office? That's the one room in the store I've never been in that I've always wanted to be
in. Yeah. But she has that like Victorian taste.
I know.
Like, you know, like she'd go up in that room and it was always a little creepy. And of course, and obviously there's stories about that place because that place, that main room was the old Ciro's, which was like mob run.
Yeah.
And if you go in the back of the Comedy Store, there's a little tunnel that goes from there all the way up to the house in Crest Hill, which I stayed at for a year.
It's still usable? You mean you can take that up to the hill?
Back, I don't think you can use the tunnel anymore. They probably filled it in, but they would roll barrels of booze down this tunnel that would go into the club, you know, like but it was mob. And there were stories about, you know, the belly room. They called it the belly room because they thought there were some, you know, abortions performed there and whatnot and stuff. And I guarantee you, you know, it's haunted. I feel like, you know,
have you ever had any ghost experience with that?
I haven't, but I know people did. And like, you know, like someone said they were coming in. And Joey Diaz told me, he goes, I was in there. And he goes, I swear to God, I saw Kinison was at the top of the steps looking down. He goes, I got cold all of a sudden. And I saw his silhouette. He goes, it creeped me out. It weirded me out. But I go, but I've heard stories from everybody else. I have not really kind of experienced it. But, you know.
I was up back one night smoking weed with a bunch of people. And it was summer. And it got cold all of a sudden. And I can't remember who it was. But they got really freaked out. And they left.
Yeah.
But it got super cold. What do they call it? The catacombs back there?
Yeah. And so, yeah, but, you know, Dice Clay and Arsenio Hall and Howie Mandel, I mean, it was just like a who's who.
Were those guys starting when you were starting?
No, I came out there. I mean, Dice wasn't where he was now, but he had done movies. He did Making the Grade. Oh, okay, he did a couple other things. So I worked with him in Philly and came out here.
But you ran with Kinison, right? Well, you were the younger guy in the
Kinison. Yeah, I was the younger guy. But when I first got out there, I was actually hanging out with Dice. And everybody was like friendly until, you know, there was stories about like, you know, well, I don't know what the falling out was was about, but eventually him, because they all kind of used to hang up there and write and work on each other's act back. You know,
that's what Yakov said with Dice would be up there.
Yeah,
all the
it was
time,
a different, it was a completely different vibe back then. Because I remember guys would stand around and goes, "Oh, you should do that," or the, and guys would help you like write your act. And now, because they don't want to do that, I'm going to do that on stage later on. You got to be kind of careful what you say around there because it can work its way up onto the stage. Yeah. You know,
but there's still dudes. You know, we all have those relationships with guys that'll be like, "Dude, if you want this, take it," and you'll say, you know.
Yeah, because, you know, it's totally a collaborative art form. And sometimes when you're doing stand-up comedy, it's very tough to come outside yourself with a third eye and see. And someone else can see it much easier. You go, you should take it over there. And go, oh.
Someone did it to me.
Think about that. Yeah.
I did crowd work. My whole set on Sunday at the store was all crowd work. And my buddy hit me up and he's like, dude, I caught like the I missed the first 5 minutes. But he goes, that crowd work was awesome. I go, thanks, man. I go, anything stand out to you? And he was like, boom, 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 boom. I'm like, love it. And one of them's a joke. You know, the other ones were just like, like observations more of like how I was doing crowd work, but then there was one that was like, oh, that could be a joke. And I'm like, oh, dude.
Now, why is crowd work something you've just started kind of doing, venturing into? I mean, I know everybody does a little bit.
I always, like if I'm on the road, I'll always do it because I like to do it and then bring it into a joke and then go back in and bring it into a joke.
Yeah, right. Kind of deflect off the crowd, right?
Yeah.
Bring back to your act.
But like the last, like, I don't know, 4 to 6 months at the store, every time I go up, I'm like, I'm getting like more like 11:30, 11:45 spots. And I'm like, it's way more fun for the audience to like go to crowd work at that point because they're getting tired. And it's like, I feel like it's a stronger muscle to flex. And then I can get them, bring them into a joke, then go back and do it.
Yeah, because then it really seems like you're kind of like free flowing. And you're right. At that hour of the night, it's almost better.
They need
to do
something
it.
Like that's right there.
Yeah, it's
happening,
great. That's, you know? That's smart, actually, to tell you the truth. Because I always, because you can go up at like 11:30, 12 o'clock, just hit it, and just the guy before you just, and then the crowd kind of leaves.
Oh,
and
dude. Sunday like, night. It was, I forget who went right before. Someone really good went, and then like it emptied, and then it was like Mary Lynn, and then me, and then a couple people left after Mary Lynn, and so then it was down to like 50 people, and I had so much fun with them. Like, they get stoked when you give that energy, when you see the room dropping out, and you keep bringing it. It was awesome.
No, that's great, man. And it really is. The original room is one of my favorite rooms in the country to play and work, and it's such a magical room. I just think it's just, you know, when that, on a Saturday night, and there's nothing better about 9:30. That room's just great.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
No, it's insane. Well, this, you were telling me earlier about that, which wasn't really insane. And it kind of works into the death that we were just talking about.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, you do a lot of different types of gigs, and I got booked to do this Christmas party.
Do you get booked on a lot of corporate gigs?
Yeah, I do. I actually, nowadays I do because there's so much money in it. It's like, you know, I don't want to go do the ships. I really got a kind of aversion to that. I don't want to do them. I'd rather, you know, but I've managed to do a lot of casinos and a lot of theater stuff and also corporate stuff, and it really kind of keeps my schedule going. But I was good booked for this Christmas party for another comedian, and I was talking to the guy.
Where was it?
It was up in Santa Rosa, California.
Oh, yeah, I love it up there.
And apparently the guy was the owner of like 9 auto body shops, and by all accounts was a great guy.
Uh-huh.
So the guy gives me a call.
Who gives you the call?
The guy who was booked me, this guy Peter, goes, I got some bad news. I said, what's that? He goes, the owner of the company died. I go, oh, my God, I am so sorry to hear that. He goes, we're still having the party, so you're still going to come up here and do it. I go,
wait, when? How far in advance was this?
Well, this was like, so the guy died Monday. He called me Wednesday to let me know that. The party's on Saturday night. The funeral's on Friday.
Not even a week.
So I'm telling the guy, I said, well, listen, you got to set me up for success here. You can't, you know, get put some stuff on that's kind of happy.
What do you put some stuff on?
Well, you know, like singers, they had carolers there. It was a Christmas party. They had kind of did a karaoke thing. Yeah. They could have had, you know, something to like, you know, create a warmth.
Before the comic comes up, we're going to do a moment of silence and 12 bell tolls.
Do 20-minute video of a eulogy. 20-minute of a eulogy. 20 minutes of a eulogy. Guy goes, I'm going to go up and talk now. I'm going to bring you up after me. And go, oh, you did. So I'm in there. I'm walking the stage. And I'm walking.
40 minutes of people crying.
How many people are holding each other? There's about 400 people.
They're holding
400 people. They're holding each other. Some people are sobbing. Oh, well, guys, all right. Who's ready to laugh?
And Nobody fix the transmission like Robbie.
Dude, I'm walking up and the family's there. And the family decided to have the party. and this, that, and the other thing. And in the back of my mind, I'm come up on stage, and I'm looking at the family, and I'm looking at this guy, Peter, who screwed me. You know, and then for a half a second.
How long do you have to do, real quick?
I got
to
do about 30 minutes. 40 minutes.
That's
so
long.
So I'm sitting there. You're sitting there when people are hugging each other, sobbing, looking at you for the comedy relief. And the family's sitting there, and they're trying to be nice because they know it's horrible. And in my head, I had this thought in my head. I'm going, well, Peter, I was talking to Peter. He told me before John passed away, he talked to him at the hospital. The last thing he said was, I hope the comedian at the Christmas party is funny. Like I could, like I almost opened with that joke because they fucked me so hard by setting me up like this with the whole family there. That would have been horrible. But I mean,
you could have had so many. You could have gone up there and be like, "Hey guys, I'll be straight up." Right before he passed, he was working on an old Chevy I had, and it's still not running. If there's anybody here.
Check anybody. Still on. If anybody knows how to
you know, not for nothing. You know, but I mean, but you know, the guy was a pillar of the community. I mean, really, he had a great family. His sons were great, and the family was
great. I don't
know
if anybody out there knew this, but he had a coke problem. I don't know if anybody out there in the family knew this.
What did you do for 30 minutes?
I sat up there and took haymakers from silence. Silence. Silence.
It is. And haymakers.
I just did. I walked back. I got my check. I said to the guy, I said, Chris Rock would have bombed because you said because of the way you said me. I said, Chris Rock would have went down like an Iraqi fighter pilot. I mean, you just didn't give me any. He goes, yeah, you're right. Nobody could have done good in that situation. I
said, 20 minutes,
why the fuck did you do it then? I mean, really, I asked you before. I said, you know, you had to set me up for success. He goes, well, we didn't know he was going to die. We didn't know that. I go, I get it. Just give me my check.
And did you hang out?
No, I didn't hang out, bro. I went back to my room. I guess,
here's the car calendar. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's funny.
I hang out. Make yourself at home. Yeah, you're sitting in the corner drinking, and people are looking at you. Oh, that's that fucking comedian. People are holding each other sobbing during my set. Hey, that was another funny story, Kylie boy.
Shit. Because I did a corporate that you had done the year before, remember? Every year they do that 86 Lumber Party.
Which is a great group.
And I did it the year after, and like I golfed with the guys.
Yeah.
And then they were like, hey, you gonna come down and have dinner with us? I'm like, nah, I kind of like don't like to see the audience. And he's like, they're like, all right, well, Jimmy Schubert came down and ate dinner with everybody. And I was like, oh, Jesus, fucking Schubert, really putting the fucking sticks to me here.
No, I was hungry, dude. They had a nice little buffet, but they were great people. That's a great, but
they were
Nemacolin, that little amazing resort. That was unbelievable. What a great little facility.
You go to the cigar lounge after and smoke cigars?
Yeah, I went to the cigar lounge, hung out. I was my girl was from Pittsburgh, so we got to hang out, but it was a great little thing. And I'm actually getting ready to go up there August 13th, 15th, and 17th, I'm doing a whole bunch of shows up there as well.
In that region?
Yeah, in that like same resort, the Nemacolin.
Having you for the weekend?
No, it's just something else. It's some other corporate stuff and some stuff like that, but it's a whole week. Like there's one on the 13th, there's one on the 15th, there's one on the 17th.
Damn.
And someone just threw an 18th, the Saturday night. It's the same place, a different party altogether. So they said, while you're in town, you might as well do it. I said, yeah, sure.
That's killer. Bring your sticks.
And then I go, and I'm doing one in July 10th. Then I go to Dubai. I'm going over to Dubai for a...
With a med?
Over there in the Middle East. I'm going over there for about 11 days doing some stand-up.
Nice. For the expats?
Expats, yeah. All expats. I like that. You know, those trips, you know, where you can go to Cleveland for the 10th time, or you can go to like somewhere like that. So, I like to do at least a couple of those a year where you get to go see the world, whether it's an Armed Forces Entertainment Tour, or you're going to China, or you're going to Israel, or there's a lot of those. I like that international travel. It's great.
Do you ever go back to Philadelphia?
Yeah, I was just back there. I was actually, I don't know if you saw a video, but I did the show got snowed out because they had like 12 inches, like March 21st. They had like 12 inches, so... My buddy come and gets me because he was working. He goes, we shut down the shop. He goes, what are we doing? I go, we're going to go to Suicide Hill, which because we had a Suicide Hill.
Oh, yeah, went sledding.
Which is so I went sledding for like a little bit, but it was a...
With these knees?
Seriously? These were actually fixed by them. Went right down the hill.
New knees, baby.
I managed to stay out of the creek, and it was fantastic. Yeah.
How many times did you go down?
I went down about 3 times.
And what kind of sled were you rocking?
I was one of those bodyboards you surf with. The guy just had a couple in his trunk, so we used to go down and on. We would take go to the junkyard and get the hood off of like a 1970 Impala, and you like grab 20 guys.
Shut up.
Oh no! And you put a little string on it, and then you'd all get on it like you're like and
standing.
And it was hilly, yeah, standing or sitting or whatever. But the problem is, at the bottom of this hill, there was a creek.
Yeah,
and so you could go in the when I was. was a kid, I went in the creek and I had to walk all the way home. And by the time I got home, I was frozen. Everything was frozen. And mom would be sitting there with a grilled cheese and a hot bowl of tomato soup and some hot chocolate, bro. And to this day, that's soul food to me. I mean, if I have a grilled cheese and some tomato soup, it takes me right back.
Yeah, I don't know anybody who gets comfort from a grilled cheese and a tomato soup. That's really weird.
I'm just kidding about that. What? We used to go to the junkyard and get the tubes, the inner tubes, and blow those up and put four people on those and just go down these fucking hills like crazy.
Yeah.
I remember one time we went to, they call it McDaniel College now, Western Maryland College, where the Colts used to have their training camp. The Redskins will go up there.
Right.
And the Ravens actually started there for a while too. But they have a really nice golf course. But during the winter, it's all fucking hill all the way. So they'll let you sleigh ride down it because they're going to just do the course over
again. You sleigh ride down?
Yeah, man.
You bring sleighs down.
Sleighs.
Woo!
Sleighs, sleds.
And you're laying at the bottom of the hill.
We used to have the sled. You were
laid at the bottom of the hill after
that's
you had
a sleigh. Metal, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, red, like the red flyers.
The flyers.
Yeah, it's sleigh.
That's a sleigh. Like,
yeah, that's no. You
that's a sleigh.
Now you can sit on it.
It's not a sleigh.
If it has metal on it, it's a sled.
That's not a sled.
It's a sled. You know, you could steer it with your feet, or you can lay it on your
that's
stomach.
Right.
And if you went over the Nutcracker and got airborne, and that's
over.
That would hit
your rib
busted
to
splinters, he would wreck it. He would just
we would tear down that hill. And a friend of mine, you know it was the saucer, that metal, like that aluminum saucer. You know what I'm talking about? Just hold on the side. He's going down. He's smoking a fucking cigarette on the way down, and I'm coming back up, and I just see it was a torch. Like the wind just caught it. It's blowing his face. He can't spit the fucking thing out, and I just see him go by, and I'm just dying laughing. Like this my buddy over here. Everybody looked like a fucking candle coming down
the hill, all
around
his cheeks.
His goatee.
Hey, light another cigarette when you get down the hill, jackass.
There was we would sled at Bear Hill Country Club and Unicorn, and then there was like all golf courses were great places to sled.
Yeah,
and I remember going down this one hill, and I'm flying. And this girl's like, "Jay!" Like, tried to like warn me, and like, what is she yelling at? Boom, right in the creek. Soaked. But it was like, you know, when it's like,
how old were you when you did that?
High school.
Yeah, high school.
You know,
you're
you
frozen.
Don't give a
now
shit.
You got soaked.
Oh, but it didn't matter because you know, like when it was like wet snow,
right.
And it was still like it's not cold. We forget that like that's not cold
just
when it's
slush.
Snowing out. No, it was snow on the ground, but I'm saying like in the 20s, that's not cold. And to be wet, you're like, whatever. I can go an hour and a half wet like this because you're young and you're still like, you know.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah. The problem was the walk back soaking wet. I mean, they would have a fire
at cars,
the top.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we
I was a fire kid. In like a trash can?
Yeah, trash can. Like it's Philly, bro. I don't care.
It just an old car. You just lit the car.
Yeah, they had the hood of the Impala and a fire barrel. With just, you know, guys singing doo-wop around the barrel.
Doo-wop. You know. One time we were sledding and we had like, you know, like the tube ones, you know, with the handles on it.
Yeah.
And it was me and this kid, Gerard Lehman. And then Mike O'Toole decided last minute as like we're starting to go down, he's walking up. He dove on it, landed on me.
Right.
And my face went down onto the side of the hill and the whole way down the hill and just ripped up the entire side of my face. My entire face was ripped open. Fifth grade. We had to go back to John Lehman's house. His mother was like, oh, my God.
Scabby McGillicuddy showing up. That's horrible, man.
Fucking loved it, man. I got some attention in school.
Nice, man. He was a tough kid, man. He took that like a man getting down and sliding down the hill.
What did you think about – what were you more excited about, Villanova winning the national title?
No, the Eagles,
the
bro.
Eagles the almost Eagles almost winning the Super Bowl.
Well, you know what's so funny? Because I watched them the week before when they played the Vikings, and they put up 37 points against one of the number one defense in the NFL, and I just said, you know, if they can play like that, and I know, you know, Nick Foles, or as we call him in Philly, Big Dick Nick, I mean, that guy was a Pro Bowl quarterback in 2013.
He was.
And people forget, if you go back to his college career when he played for Arizona, he broke all Drew Brees' passing records. That guy is a legitimate thrower of the football. And you some of those passes he threw during that Viking game, I was like, man, and boy, he came out and was masterful against the
I didn't even notice that. It just I didn't even notice how good he was in that game.
Dude, that Philly special, bro, Philly. I love that he called his own number on that, but I thought that was great. But it was a great Super Bowl regardless. I mean, you know, and it came down to the last play in the game. I mean, you're still playing Belichick and Brady, two of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. I mean, you know.
Some might say the greatest.
The greatest of all time.
Yeah.
You know, some people would argue for Joe Montana, but, you know, whatever.
Montana.
Or Tony Montana. Tony, I mean, whoever you want, man.
Man, I'll tell you right now. I'll
tell you, from Criminal Minds.
Greatest Cuban.
He played
Tony Montana.
He played college
man,
ball.
Joe Montana, man.
Joe Montana. He's a great actor, but he's a better quarterback.
He had got a deal with LA Gear, too, man. First Latin American performer to get a deal at.
But you're right. The greatest of all time. And so it came down to the
Where
last
did you watch the game?
I watched it in Philly. And then
Where?
At my brother's buddy's house. It was all me and my brothers were there watching the game together.
How many of your brothers were there? There's six of you?
Three of them, yeah. There's three of the brothers were there, and the other ones were watching it somewhere else. But, yeah, me and my brothers went crazy. I just came down to the last play. It was so, like, come on. And, you know, just it was a great game. I thought it was one of the best Super Bowls I've seen in the last
Did
couple
Did you throw it around at halftime?
No, we didn't throw it around at halftime. You know, no, we were just but yeah, what a great – I mean, I kept watching highlights for the next week afterwards. I couldn't get
– I still watch.
I still watch
2000, 2012.
So what do you think about the Patriots? What do you think? I mean, I know you're a Patriots fan. What do you think? Do you think Brady's going to come back next year? Think Belichick's going to – I mean,
yeah,
what about that?
They're both back.
Yeah, that offensive coordinator didn't go to the Indianapolis Colts, though. Yeah. He said he would. I think maybe this might be their last year, and then he's going to actually inherit the mantle, you think?
I think he's going to. I think they're going to, like – you know, they have two picks in the first round, and they have, like, two in the second. Right. They're like rumors are kind of going around that he's gonna take that 23rd pick and get somebody for the blind side, and then take the 31st pick and trade that for like second round picks, and then stock up like with a QB that like he sees something in that nobody else is seeing right now, because you know that draft is like top heavy QBs right now.
Yeah.
But there's still that kid from like Washington who's a stud. There's a kid from like some like crazy like small D1 school that's a stud. There's a couple other QBs out there.
Yeah, and they need quarterbacks in that league right now, that's for sure. That's why I'm surprised Nick Foles. I mean, he even though he's under contract, he can't really go anywhere, nor do I think does he want to go anywhere. I think
Well, RG3 just got backup out there in Baltimore,
he
baby.
He sure did.
Yeah. Woo! What do you think about that?
I mean, it's a lottery ticket. That's the way they describe
it.
He's
injury prone.
They brought him in to try out some receivers, and they were like, damn, you're throwing it all right out there. Oh, yeah. And they fucking offered him I think it's like $1 million deal. He might not even make it past fucking training camp. But either way, they said he looked really good and they're willing to take a flyer on him.
Yeah, well, good. Hopefully he does. I mean, you know, I believe in second chances for guys like that.
It would be nice because we're the team. Haloti Ngata is the guy that knocked him out and altered his career. It'd be nice to see him resurrect his career with the team that did it.
You say hello to Ngata for me as well, would you? I'd appreciate it, man.
Support for the Crab Feast comes from Backblaze. Unlimited cloud backup for Macs and PCs for just $5 a month. Backblaze backs up documents, music, photos, videos, drawings, projects, everything. Access all your data anywhere in the world, on the web, or on the go, on your phone. Best of all, you can restore just one file or all your files. The choice is yours. Restore by mail. If you have a complete system failure, you can purchase a hard drive with all your data on it, overnighted via FedEx. You can even return the drive and get a full refund. It's a win-win. Over 29 billion files restored. There's a lot of return documents and memories. Backblaze is gimmick-free. There are no additional charges, just $5 a month for full backups. Make sure you visit backblaze.com/crab so they know where you came from and continue to support the show. Receive a fully featured 15-day free trial at backblaze.com/crab. Go there, play with it, start protecting yourself from the potential bad times. Start today.
Well, I wanted to ask you, you know, sports fans in Philly are notoriously assholes, right?
Yeah, I mean, people say that, but I think Philly's consistently number two in almost all sports. Like, if you go
behind who?
Well,
Boston or
no,
New York?
No, different teams. Like Oakland, I think would be the number one.
Boston
worst
fans are nowhere near what Philly fans are. Philly fans turn on their players. We don't turn on our players.
Yeah,
he was telling me they booed Darren Dalton on Father's Day.
Father's Day with his kid out there.
What did he do?
I don't know, but they did. But that's why I
on
thought
Father's Day.
Yeah, but that's why I thought
have
the people
with his kid.
That's why I thought like the Philadelphia would never win a Super Bowl. Well, because their fans were such douchebags.
Yeah.
I mean, my brother calls them Philbillies. There's like these inner city redneck going, man, what's going on? Like two-streeters, and they're just like animals, you know? Out in front of the stadium eating a banana with their foot, and then they're going to come into the game.
What?
And, you know, just like animals, savages, you know?
Did you guys go to a lot of sports as a kid?
Yeah.
Like, you know, did you have money for that, or what were you doing?
No, we would go and try to sneak in. I mean, I remember climbing out the fence. Like, we could just, once the cops passed, you could run that fence and get up and over the fence because you were a kid. And then
There's no cops would come on horseback.
No, there was, but you throw your jacket over it and then go over it. You just kind of.
Over fucking barbed wire?
You throw the jacket. The guy would throw his jacket over it, and then you could all go over the jacket stuff. And then it was just a fence. I mean, but yeah, we first guy up throws his coat over it, and then everyone else would slide and just kind of flip over the.
Yeah.
Thing, you know, but then cops would come on horseback, and if they could grab you, they would grab you and pull you off the fence. But I remember watching Tug McGraw through the. I got in and ran into the stadium. Tug McGraw was throwing the last pitch of the game, and you know, strike out. He jumped up, and I remember watching that through one of those holes in the stadium there, just watching it from there. But the cops were like, they were looking for everybody, and you know, it was before fake tickets and all that other stuff. But yeah,
that was the shit for you guys, sneaking into games.
Yeah, we could. My brother Johnny, this is a true story, my brother Johnny got a yellow jacket that said security on it, and he would get a hat, and him and his buddies got a couple of walkie talkies, and they would literally wait for like 5 seconds before the game, and they would knock on the door and bang, like, oh, come on, we're running late. And they would just run past because they had the yellow jackets on. Nobody questioned them. And they would sit in the end zone and watch all the games. He did that everywhere he went. He would go to Konstatter's, this like local like Polish home, and he would go, give me an apron. They want me to wash dishes. And because it's a volunteer thing, they throw him an apron on, and he starts back there. He's washing dishes. And the next thing you know, he's behind the bar getting pitchers of beer and plates of kielbasa with sauerkraut for his buddies and feeding all his friends. And just because he has all the gear on, nobody questions him.
That is
he did it
awesome.
for years. Until the people had a big party for all the people that help and volunteer. And they said, hey, where's that kid Johnny? He is always here every year helping out. He's not at the party. I don't see him. But he would make friends with all these people every year he'd come back. Yeah, he did it for years. It was great.
That's the play, man. Just that act like you belong. Play.
Yeah, just act like you belong. And they would sit there with all the other guys in the jackets and talk to him like he knew what he was doing. And
why did he stop?
I don't know. I just think he just, you know, kind of got over it. You could only do it so much. But he did it for a long time. It was great.
Where were you in the line of six brothers?
I was number three. I was like number three. I got two older brothers and three younger brothers, and so I was like number three in the middle. And you know, just like when I hit 19, that's when I said, all right, I'm going out. I, you know, worked that summer, saved some money, and drove out to California.
And you were out of there.
Yeah.
You share a room for your whole life?
Oh, yeah, three. Stacked formation. We had the bunk beds and then a single bed and stuff like that.
That was me, 10th, 11th, 12th grade.
Yeah, you know, well, you got a family that big.
I fought for the twin bed because that was the closest I had to my own room.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, you know what you do? Well, it was just different times back then, but it was like, it's so funny because you know, I mean, we had to go get summer. I was thinking about the other day how much I always had jobs. I always from like 11, 12, whether I was washing dishes at the cottage green or delivering circuits. But I always had money. And by the time I was 16, I started giving my mom like 40 bucks a month or 60 bucks a month to help pay for, like, you know, milk. She had six kids. We were eating them out of house and home, a couple of savages. So we got every day. So we had to run and get 2 gallons of milk.
I bet for
damn,
six boys.
Every day.
Me and my brother would just grab that gallon of milk and chug it from the container.
Yeah.
And like there were it was just two boys and then my two sisters. We drank a lot of milk.
Yeah.
Can imagine.
Yeah, no, but
especially with one guy who played in the NFL, you know.
Yeah, no, it's funny. No, but you know, and it's great. You know, my mom, you know, they had I asked my dad. I said, "Why how many?" I said, "Cuz my dad lost his father when he was 8." I said, "Why did you decide to have a big what were you thinking?" He said, "Ah, we just started if we want to start a family. We had you four guys, and your mom was thinking maybe she'd like to have a little girl." And so we tried again and Chris came, and then we tried again, Tom came, and I was like, "That's it. We're done. I can't, you know, we tried. It was just, you know, that's why I have so many brothers." I think my and so she wasn't, you know, mad about her or anything. She dresses up like little girls just to get even, you know.
Yeah.
But it just was what it was. But she you know, she would get up every day. You know, we all had like a big thing of vitamins, and she'd make everybody breakfast and send us off to school. It was, you know.
Any good family traditions on the holidays?
Oh, yeah. I love going back home because, you know, you come from a big family. It's everybody's around. Everybody's cracking, you know, busting balls. I mean, you know, because you grew up in a family of all brothers, the ball busting is nonstop.
Who's the funniest?
you know, my brother Johnny.
The guy who sneaks in everywhere?
Yeah, the guy sneaks in everywhere. He's just, you know, he's just funny just standing around talking to him. He's funny. And he has no filter and he doesn't give a shit. So people always say, well, Johnny Schubert's the funniest Schubert. I go, yeah, but he doesn't make his living doing it. So it doesn't. You know, but they just love to rub it in.
Of course they
do. They just love to rub it in because they know it gets to me. But, right. you know, but you know, he actually tried stand-up for a little while. He goes, man, he goes, that shit's tough. He goes, I wrote 5 minutes of material. I was up there for 30 seconds.
I bet. Yeah, that goes quick.
Yeah. So, but.
We talked a little bit about this. Can we talk a little bit about some of that? I mean, what was that like having girls when you were like sharing a room with five dudes?
Well, yeah, that stuff was like, you know, I remember my freshman year, there was this old DeSoto, it was a 1953 DeSoto up, and it was parked up behind this house and old leaves around it, and I knocked on the lady's door, and I said, well, that'd be interesting if you could get that car. And I asked, I said, are you have any interest in selling that car? And she goes, you know.
How old were you?
I was like 16, 17, she goes, you can have that car for $200. I said, really? She goes, yeah. He goes, I'll give you the title for it. So I went, and the thing didn't run.
Yeah.
I mean, but it was a 1953 DeSoto. It had a shifter on the column. Mm-hmm. And me and my buddy were in there, like every day after school, we're down there. He had a whole can of starter fluid. And finally, that thing kicked off. And it was ancient, man. Big black counters. And I was like, I drove it for my last. Like my last.
You got it to actually work?
Yeah, I got that. And the back seat was enormous. It was like ridiculous. And yeah, I drove it. Everybody called me Richie Cunningham because I had this 1953 DeSoto. And it was a beast of a car, man. It was like one of those.
Yeah.
It was just a monster of a car. And it was like, you know, it had the Hemi head in it. It was just. But that's what I drove for my last 2 years of high school. And then the brake line rotted out and I lost my brakes one night and wound up here kind of just.
Driving? You lost your brakes?
Yeah. I had to like kind of ditch it up on the curb a little bit and then put the brake on. But that was it. That was the end of that car.
You're like, fuck it.
It cost me $200, bro. You know, my first car before that, I brought off my brother for $50. It was like a 1971 Chevy Impala that was a burned smoke and had the tires were as bald as a baby's ass. And we went
from a 71 to a 53?
Yeah, just like that. But, you know, you can get those junk cars from the junkyard. And they were such, like, you paid $50 or $60. And then what guys would do, because we would play car tag. Like, up our house, there was these apartment complex in Tenham. And so, like, you know, you would, you know, just dumb kids. Like, you walk over and you run your car. And like, tag, you're it.
You would literally just drive your car into each other's car.
Yeah, we'd play car tag.
Did you ever do that, Ryan?
We did it at the junkyard, but not with our cars.
But that's where we
got
to
get out. We got the
cars. We got the cars from the junkyard. So we would, you know, and guys would like, you know, like, and I know guys would steal cars. Like some guys would steal cars. Another, this other group up that was up the street in this neighborhood, Morrell, they would steal cars and they would, you know, go up to this Byberry and play and just play car tag, and you'd drive it all over the place, and then you would leave the car and walk home, and, you know, just.
You ever steal a car?
No, I never did.
No.
No. I would. No, are you kidding me? My old man would kill me.
What did he do?
He's a detective.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck that detective. Shit.
Yeah. I did. If I got locked up for anything, the ass beating, my old man had to go down to the police station and get any one of us out. Oh, it was the ass beating of all centuries. Like, just, you know. That old list. Oh, you get yelled at all the way home, and you get beat. You know?
Oh, he saved it for when he got home.
Oh yeah, he saved it. Yeah. No, he would. He try to be like normal in front of the guys.
Right. Yeah.
I don't blame my old man. He had six kids. I'm surprised he has any of his marbles left at all.
Yeah.
Because I mean, we tortured my old man. Like, I mean, he just stealing money out of his sock drawer. You know, you got six kids. You know where every nickel's going. He would have like, you know, maybe $40 in the sock drawer, and you know, he comes home and he can't find the $40 in the sock drawer. Now me and my brothers would walk around. Baseball cards, random baseball cards, bubble gum. What's up, Pops? How you doing? This guy's breaking down murderers and rapists.
I mean,
and, you know,
that
interrogating show. Those guys, and then it comes to us, and we're like, nah. I don't know what happened. It's my house. Smelling like that white powder from the bubble gum all over your lips.
Totally.
Smacking them, playing flipsies outside, you know.
So wait, when you had the DeSoto, was that like where you hooked up with chicks?
Yeah, well, you would try. I mean, obviously, it was, you know, it was a different time. But yeah, but you had the back seat. I mean, you could, you know, you make out in the back seat of your car. At least you had something to do.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, rather than like going down to the golf course and, you know, getting a hand job with no eye contact on the 13th green. You know what I mean? You birdied that hole? Yeah, I birdied that hole. You know
what I mean? I mean, how did, because you had five other brothers. I mean, where do you go?
Shit.
What's that?
You know what I mean? Well, that's like...
Yeah, well, there was no privacy. I mean, that's why, you know,
no.
Totally, you know, there was no privacy. I mean, you really couldn't even, like, you know, you couldn't do anything. You couldn't even, you know, rub one out into a gym sock. I mean, someone was always around, you know? Yeah. If your mom wasn't kicking in the door. That's why, like, it was somewhere, like, you know, maybe you had a magazine, dirty magazine you hid somewhere. We had the drop ceiling, so you could drop the ceiling and put the books in the ceiling, you know?
Yeah.
And sure enough, mom would find it. She would find everything. She would just, I mean, there was no, you couldn't hide anything where my mom could not find it. That's why I'm so, like, you know, how these kids compile an arsenal in the garage with pipe bombs and mom doesn't know about it. I mean, I don't know. My mom knew where everything was. She knew what everything was going down. I think my dad, you know, kept tabs on us too. He couldn't get away with nothing. He goes, yeah, sorry. I remember one time I was going down to the Philadelphia High School of Creative Performing Arts. And one of the L stops.
Wait, did you go to art school?
Yeah, I went to art school. I went to, like, it was like an art school. It was like a magnet school in Philly. I went there for a couple of years.
For magic?
No, for acting, actually, believe it or not. And on the way back, there was this train stop, which was an outdoor train stop, and all the kids from the school would off, and we'd smoke grass, and then we'd get back on, and we would drive, take the L the rest of the way. Well, one day, my dad was with my brother and sees me standing there, and he pulls off on the side of the freeway, and he's watching me. And I don't know he's watching me. One of my buddies starts flipping him off. What the fuck are you looking at, asshole? And I'm going, hey, some guy. And I turn and go, that's my dad. That's my dad. My brother was in the car looking with a big smile on his face. And he goes, bro, you got so busted. He goes, you were so busted. I could see what you were doing from where I'm sitting. Yeah. I knew the old man saw you.
God.
And he goes, yeah, then you get the grill treatment. You know, the lights are on you. Hot lights are sitting on you underneath it. Hey, what were you doing on that train stop today? I was hanging out, you know, get some fresh air, got off the train. Yeah, is that what you were doing? Were you smoking cigarettes? What was going on over there? I was so nabbed. I couldn't even.
Jeez, you couldn't hide.
Well, you know, what are you going to do? It was my first year in the public school in Philly. So, yeah, everybody had the little, you know, smoking the weed. That's right about the time everybody starts to do it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I knew guys in my neighborhood. It was back when you could get that, like, you could get a lid. It was called a lid of pot. I think it was like $15 bag of pot. And guys would take it.
Why is it called a lid?
Because it was like $15. I think it was like a 40 lady. It was like just like the lady, like three lady fingers or whatever. And it went straight across. But it was brown, Mexican brown stuff. Horrible weed. But they would roll
practice
joints.
Practice weed.
Yeah, practice weed. Yeah. And they would... Roll,
I'd do anything for some of that now.
You can't find that.
Just to smoke them like cigarettes.
Yeah.
That's antique weed now. Seriously.
And I'm telling you, they would roll up 20, 25 joints, and you would sell the joints for like $2 a pop. You know, some guys would sell them at school and stuff, and that's how you kind of made your income. You know, as a kid, you was like, but it was just joints. It was no big deal. You know. But the pot was harmless compared to the stuff they got today.
Oh yeah, yeah. They're in laboratories with this.
That I mean, it's amazing, man.
It's amazing.
I mean, it's like I'm like, I can only take, like, if, you know, if I do, like, I can only take like a hit or two of that.
But see, that's all you need. It's what people don't understand. You don't need to smoke a 4 foot bong. One or two hits, just like a shot. One shot.
Yeah.
You only, if you just had one shot, you'd probably be right for the fucking night.
Well,
you don't
know,
need
and they got
six.
The, and they got those
plus
those,
four
the,
beers.
And they got those little things that switch onto those battery pens now, so it doesn't stink, it doesn't smell. I mean, you could hit that in the airport, nobody would know anything, you know.
Is that what you do? Is that what you do, Jimmy?
No, actually, I don't. I'm a very respectful person in the airport. I follow all the rules.
Your father's still around?
Yeah, my papa's still around.
How old is he?
He'll be 84 this year.
All right.
Yeah, but he's still around, walks every day.
He walks. He's got his original knees?
Yeah, he's still got his real knees. That's the funny thing, because all my brothers got bad knees. It must be on my mom's side of the family, because my dad's got great knees. He walks everywhere. He does Tai Chi.
Does he?
Yeah, my guy, old man, goes, does the Tai Chi. He volunteers at the old age home. They volunteer down at the Walnut Street Theater. He's still very active in the FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police.
Mm-hmm.
Still, he's a delegate there. They still drive around. He just...
What do you mean they drive around?
Well, they go around and have these conferences all over the country. And so they go to those. They do these like mini vacations. But he's also a Shriner. They do a lot of charity work. They raise money for these hospitals.
Does he drive the Harley? Does he have a Harley?
No, he's just a faction of it. But they do raise money. They have these dinners and they try to I just think my parents feel like so blessed.
And they're still together?
Yeah, still together.
Do they see you when you come back to Philly?
Yeah, they do. There's a place that I like to do called the Brigada down there in the Music Box, which really was voted one of the top 10 venues on the East Coast to see live music. But also, like during the week, they do
comedy.
Atlantic City? Okay. Which is 47 miles, you know?
Right.
But from my parents' house, door to door.
Exactly. So.
Exactly.
Your parents' house door to door is what?
It's like 47 miles from AC. You know, you just boom, boom.
Get there in an hour.
Yeah. And then so they come down.
Out here, that's 3 hours.
Yeah. Last time they came down. Yeah, exactly. Last time they came down, we had a nice dinner. I take them out for a nice dinner, and it's great. I don't take that for granted by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, any chance I get to spend with my parents, I take it because, you know, you're not going to have them forever, and you don't want to be, you know.
Yeah, well, to have them this far is great.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question about it. And they're just really good people. They really, you know, they're just great.
Not what
people.
I've heard, but that's a man who used to beat his kids.
You always got to play devil's advocate.
Used to beat his kids.
Always got to go. A man beat his kid. Back in.
You think he put a whipping on you still?
Oh my God! I got to tell you something right now, man. I mean,
got
I remember
that old man strength.
No, I remember. I remember the Flyers had won the Stanley Cup for the second time, 1974. You know, and we were all out. On the neighbor's car, just riding on the hood of the car, like nutbags going down Frankfurt Avenue.
Driving around on the hood?
Driving around all over the car. We're all hanging off the
on
guy's
the outside.
Thing.
And shit.
On the outside
how
of the car.
Old are you?
Yeah, I was like 13, 14. And
but he's got like a 17 and an 18-year-old brother. Probably.
Right.
Yeah. And so there were, it was Mr. Cobb from up the street. And he was just, you know, he's going. But he wanted to celebrate. And the whole place went nuts. I don't know what happened, but I remember that was when streaking was like big. Oh, so we're all in the car driving down. Here comes some dude dragging down the street naked as a jaybird. And says, I don't know what happened. We got home that night. My old man flipped out. You're out there driving. Oh, he went after my brother with a belt. I jumped on his back.
You took your dad down?
What's that? No, I tried to. He just shook me off. My old man had to deal with these like lunatic, like, you know, lunatic criminals.
He probably couldn't wait for some of that shit.
Oh, no. That's how he kept in shape. He kept in shape, just beating us. It wasn't all the time. But, I mean, I'm telling you, I'm glad he did because, straighten us out, you know. I mean, you know, you otherwise, you know, in my neighborhood, you know, kids, you know, OD'd and died. And a lot of those kids got locked up and went to prison. And a lot of, it was a bad neighborhood. So, you know, my old man had his hands full trying to keep all six kids out of trouble. And so I don't blame him for being like a little bit of a lunatic.
At all.
You know, in that day and age. And Philly was just, it was already a tough freaking town. I mean, you get every Friday, every weekend you go out. Somebody wanted to fight. You go to a keg. There was a fist fight, you know. So it's.
How many fights do you think you've been in?
Jesus, probably at that point in my life, almost like every weekend, it was not just, and some of the worst fights I had were in my own house with my brother.
Yeah.
You know, so, and if you got your ass beat by a neighborhood kid, you would come home, your brother would beat your ass and you had to go back out and fight the guy again.
Yeah.
I don't know why that was, but it was just a thing. And it got to a point where like my brother Bobby had a great, and Joey were just tough guys. They were like, so.
Who was the toughest in the house? You know what my great grandfather would do? If my grandfather and my great uncle were scuffing,
right,
he'd be like, let's go. And they go out in the backyard and he'd make them both put on gloves and he'd make them box it out.
I think that's great.
They had to box it out. And then, like, my grandfather, I guess, would ski.
Right.
But they used to take, like, old barrel staves and ski, like, these hills in Revere, like, not on, like, mountains, just, like, things. And my great uncle would make fun of my great, would make fun of my grandfather. And my great-grandfather said, oh, you think you're so hot? Why don't you go skiing with your brother then? And they went down these hills, and I guess my great-uncle fucking ate it hard and like almost like broke his back or some shit like that. But his whole thing was like, oh, you want to do it? Then we'll do it organized. I'll be here, and you either duke it out or you got to do what he did. And I make my son and my daughter duke it out, dude. I make them fight it out to the death.
And how old are they? Two and four?
2 and 4, yeah.
Yeah, but that's a good age to get them.
So you see blood.
River's 3 and 1, so.
it was just a different time period. I mean, you know, we were drinking from the garden hose, driving around with no seatbelts on.
I always still drink. I tell my all the time. Like the other day, my son hadn't drank, and I go, turn the hose on. Kate's like, Jay, I don't want him drinking out of the hose. I'm like, get him drinking. drinking out of that damn hose.
Yeah. Well, it's California, so, you know, what are you going to do? It's probably like, you know, Evian coming out of that tap.
It probably is all filtered and everything.
It's all filtered.
That was the best, drinking out of the fucking hose, being outside. Dude,
yeah. That well water tastes so good.
Dude, we used to go swimming in that creek at the golf course. Like, I think about it now.
Remember when you didn't give a fuck how warm the water was? Your lips would be blue. Like, you'd still be in there.
And you get your foot cut. You can get an infection. It was all this chemicals running off this aquatic club, all the chlorine coming out into that creek. I'm surprised. it was just different times. That's all. You know, now, you know, it's much different now.
Everybody, yeah, you just got to keep a part of that, though. I mean, I know I try to all the time with my kids. I try to keep elements of like what I was and what we did, and yeah, like do it with them. You know what I mean? Like
give me an example.
Like, they never have shoes on. They run around with no shoes. And like, we went back to New York, and like, they're running around with no shoes, and every other kid had their shoes on. They're like, do you want to put their shoes on? I'm like, no, we're outside. Why would they ever put their shoes on?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you gotta put their shoes on. Like, we let them go down the street to like the neighbor's house. Well, like, you know,
yeah,
they're 4 and 2, you know? So I want to do shit like that. I don't know. Let them get scuffed up. Let them fucking figure shit out.
Well, yeah, because they become smarter that way. I mean, my neighborhood, like, you know, it's just different.
And
like,
tough.
Yeah, but that whole street, everybody knew each other. They were like, you were like almost like one big extended family. Everybody knew everybody's brothers. Everybody hung out, looked after each other. It wasn't anything like, you know, like today people are just afraid to do anything with their kids because some weirdo is going to abduct them.
Well, I mean, there was some dude in our neighborhood the other day checking out one girl in our
neighborhood.
For real? Yeah, like, and started like approaching her. And our neighbor like came, and I guess the guy took off in the alley behind our house.
Yeah, that to me is like, I mean, they gotta kill those guys. Just, yeah, I'm sorry, dead. Man, you get caught doing that, you gotta
dead.
Go. Yeah. You know what? You can't behave civilized in a civilized world.
There's no coming
back from it. I mean, yeah, there's none. My old man says it's a 95% recidivism of the guys who commit that crime will commit that crime over and over and over again, and even sometimes chemical castration won't help. You know, I mean, look at these priests that have done that. I mean, they're just, you know, allowed to shuffle them around and stuff. I think they should. You should be put to death.
You had mentioned that happened to you when you were a kid with the priest, right?
Yeah, I went to Our Lady of the Glory Hole. And
well, look, we got to get Jay out of here. He's got to bounce.
No, I know, man. We're hey, guys, there. thanks for having
look,
me back.
Thank
on,
you
man.
For coming back on. Yeah, you're always welcome. Will you plug your social media or whatever you'd like?
Yeah,
one
yeah,
more
it's
time.
A, it's at Jimmy Schubert on Twitter. So if you give me a follow, I'd appreciate it. You can follow me on Instagram at Jimmy Schubert. It's Schubert. Go to my website. You can find links to all my stuff there, all my tour dates, everything.
See. If you think his energy is high end here, you should see. I mean, he's got a coffee in his hand, but on stage, you don't think a guy like this can move like he does. But for a retired linebacker, he moves.
Agile,
he moves
agile,
like a
bro.
Like a slot
for a big
receiver,
guy. You're
like
awful,
especially with those new knees.
Especially with those new knees, bro. I got the knees of a 17-year-old mall rat right now, bro. I'm running down a clearance sale, Forever 21. I got these knees.
Well, great to have you on, man, as always.
Thanks, Jack.
JLarsonComedy.com, JLarsonComedy on all social media.
RyanSickler.com, RyanSickler on all social media. We'll talk to you all next Tuesday.